There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome everybody to Benched with Bubba, episode 33. This is a special one. This is the Masters preview edition, and I am joined not by one person, not by two people, but by three golf experts. Yes, I'm gonna say golf experts just to really make the pressure on these guys. No, but I'm going with three really good golf guys to discuss pretty much the best tournament in golf, if not maybe 1A, 1B type stuff. We'll kick it off. Before I keep blabbering, we have from thesportsdegens.com, Jesse. You can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. We have Kevin. You can find him on Twitter at Kevin's Delight. And we have a special guest, not from the Sports Degens, but a good friend in our Junkies Golf League. We have Sheridan. Sheridan Sims, how are we doing? All three of you guys.
Great. Good evening, guys.
Doing good, man. Glad to be here, Bubba.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks. I know Jesse's had a couple. Probably did the Ryder Cup and a little golf preview. And we wanted to go big or go home with this one, so we had to bring in all the guns. And so let's kick it off. Before we get into the Masters, something we've been dabbling in our little private chats is FanDuel PGA as it's hit the market. And taking a little while for people to start playing, let alone figure it out, because I still don't know how it works. We'll kick it off. Whoever wants to start off with this, how do you feel it's kind of impacting the DFS market, and how long do you think before people kind of really get in the rhythm of playing it regularly?
I'll start. I mean, you know, I don't know. Their setup is so much different than anything else that has been put out in the golf fantasy world, that it has taken a little while, I think, for it to catch on. But over the last 2 weeks, the more that I've played it, actually, the more that I've liked it. And they have some really, really big contests for the Masters. So I have a feeling that it might take off this week. Previous to now, it's been kind of, you know, one of those things where you're there's a lot of overlay, but I think that stuff will change now. I know Kevin has dabbled in a little bit as well.
Yeah, Kevin, what are your thoughts on it?
It's been fun until all the carnage this weekend. you know, it seems like everyone's been really high on the scrubs, rounds 1 and 2, and the stars 3 and 4. And this week with so many guys really falling apart on Friday and not having many of the big names around on the weekend, it was pretty rough. But it's fun. It's a pretty good learning experience to try and figure out what type of for you. And as you can tell, this week really put a damper on those guys that went scrubs early and stars late.
Oh yeah, you probably weren't hanging around long. Sheridan, you been playing any FanDuel at all?
Yeah, man. It's kind of to echo what they just said. It's been a different learning experience. I mean, I think it's like anything; it just kind of takes a little bit of time to get used to the change. But it's definitely a challenge. So I think for everybody that likes to play multi different sports and different types of contests, it's been a change of pace and kind of makes you reevaluate how you approach different events and tournaments. So it's been fun.
Yeah, it's from what I've heard from most guys, like Kevin said, a lot of it's the scrubs and stars approach. You can mix and match, but you got burned this past week. And I think I was telling Jesse or someone else, the way I look at it, the reason why I'm kind of frustrated with it is when you play DraftKings, you pick your six guys and you know what you're going to battle with for the whole tournament. And then when you have FanDuel, it's, you know, you pray that you pick the right two rounds to play these guys. Because what if they go off in the end? That's frustrating as hell. So I compared it to – it's like when you go to the casinos. Well, DraftKings, I compare to blackjack. It's the closest thing that's in your control. But FanDuel, you're playing the penny slots, and you're praying you hit it big. So yeah.
No, that is so true, because the last 2 weeks we've put in – I mean, I've put in a lot of lineups, and I've done decently well, especially Thursday, Friday, and I'm sitting good until Saturday, Sunday, and you don't know what to root for. And that's the worst part about it. And why do I play fantasy sports? So I can root for people. And it's difficult to really figure out, well, I want this guy to make the cut but not really do that well until he plays his third round and then go and make all kinds of birdies, but just save them all for the weekend but just barely make the cut. And it's just I don't know, man. That's the thing I hate the worst about it.
Yeah, that's why I've had a hard time getting into it. It's because, like I said, with DraftKings, you have your guys either making the cut or they're not, but you're rooting for them. Yeah. You want them to go low the whole time. FanDuel, it's almost like you want to barely make the cut, and then you want your weekend guys to go off at the end. And then your other guys, it's a whole weird deal, but I guess we'll get more into it. We'll see how the Masters tournaments go for them. But it's good that they're at least putting money into it. It's something different. It's just weird with the potential merger involved, having two completely separate types of formats. It seems a little odd, but we'll see. We'll kick this one off with Kevin. The PGA season's, you know, it's only going on a few months now, 3 months now. What are some of the big, like, highlights, exciting moments that kind of kicked off the year for you?
Well, obviously, DJ being so dominant, when he tees it up, you feel like he's by far the favorite, you know, is almost as dominant as Tiger was when he was in his heyday, winning almost every time he teed it up. You see DJ's odds are 6-7 to 1 in some spots for the Masters, and that's crazy low. But the way he's playing right now, it's pretty damn good way to start the season. He's unbelievably good.
He's locked in. Yeah. He's locked in.
Russell Henley's round today was as good as they come, you know, knowing he's got to make a run and going out there and putting the pedal to the metal and playing. Something to be said for that, and pretty good to see heading into the Masters this week.
Yeah, definitely. Sheridan, do you have any big highlights from the start of the season?
I think just to echo, you know, what Kevin said, just seeing DJ coming out firing, I think, you know, a lot of people were kind of pulling for him. Seems like he just had, you know, bad beat after bad beat coming into the end of last year, and then seeing him just roll right in like he didn't even take any time off. But then also just seeing kind of the young crop, you know, you're seeing a lot of guys coming in, you know. I think – one of the more fun people for me to watch has been Adam Hadwin. And I'm sure that's not a name that many people are going to shy away from this week, but you know, it's just cool to see some of these young guys come out and show up and continue to have that success. You know, there's always going to be those one-offs, but you know, to be that young and playing with guys that they've grown up watching and seeing them perform at that level, it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, definitely. It's you got Hadwin and, you know, John Rahm's really finally making that name for himself, which is impressive as all hell. His round today was – he looked like he was just kind of going to limp into the Masters, and he went and brought it. It's pretty interesting to see. Jesse, what are your takeaways from the start of the season?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I anytime you see somebody play as good a golf as Dustin Johnson has, it's pretty just amazing and awe-inspiring. You know, as far as like in the DFS world, it's been kind of the year of the chalk. And you know, I'm kind of a chalky type of player, and so it's been fun to watch the chalk hit quite often. But also you got, you know, other guys who are playing really good golf, you know, Grillo's on the way up, and you know, a bunch of other younger guys coming off the web.com tour, who are making a name for themselves. And of course the resurgence of Ricky Fowler too. I think that's a big, yeah, he kind of had a lot of struggles last year after a certain trip to the Bahamas, and I think he finally figured it out again.
Yeah, I doubt they're making that trip this year, it seems like. A little more focused on golf. But
Miley's still on Moby.
Yeah, I like you guys said, a couple things. The DJ, I wouldn't even say renaissance, just the domination of DJ. I know you guys have seen a lot of golf in person, so you guys have probably seen him play. I see him when he comes out here to Pebble. I tell people that I haven't seen him in person. First off, he's a tall beanstalk. He's not even that big. He's like skinnier than hell. People don't understand that because they see him hit 400-yard shots, it seems like. But I say it's – the way I describe his drive, at least, it's like the most beautifully violent thing you'll ever see. It is just a whip and just – the ball has to be crying when it leaves. It's insane. But yeah, also the young kids, that's a good point. It's like you got the web.com guys minus, you know, Grayson Allen. At least he made the cut this week. That was big. But like JT Spahn and those guys, that's fun to watch. And one thing that I had written down that me is so many low rounds. You had like JT in Hawaii. You had Hadwin's low round. You had Henley today. A lot of like low 60s, high 50s rounds, a lot more than normal. I don't know if they attest that to – you know, the new technology or what it is. Kevin, you might know, you're a golf pro. What can you attest that to?
Oh, gosh. I mean, these guys are putting on surfaces that are unbelievably good right now. And you tend to see a whole lot more low scores early in the season, I think. You know, most of the West Coast courses, with the exception of maybe Torrey, they're shorter courses. You can kind of bang it around. Not a whole lot of rough in most places. Look at Phoenix. Wait till you get more up in Ohio and – Jack's Place, you don't see those guys shooting many 59, 60, 61s around there. But these guys are just so good with the technology nowadays and all the numbers they have and all the different putting aids. I mean, it's the game is totally different now, even from 10 years ago. These guys are just so dialed in. When they're on, they're tough to beat. And I wouldn't be shocked if you saw, you know, one or two 59s every year for – the next 10 years. It's going to happen. I mean, these guys are that damn good.
Yeah, they are that impressive. Let's hit one more topic before we really dig into the Masters. I kind of mixed it up on you guys here, but since you already withdrew, it doesn't really matter for Masters talk anymore, but let's talk El Tigre, Eldrick. I know we joke about it a lot and everything, but I'm on the belief that if he's playing, it's like once or twice a year now, because he can't even sit in a wooden chair. I think he's just there to buy TaylorMade and then sell his clubs. I don't know what he's doing. Sheridan, do you have any thoughts on Tiger and his future? What the hell's going on with him?
Man, it's been a tough, I guess, weekend for me, because I'm one of those, you know, diehard old school Tiger guys. And I was talking to a friend over the weekend. I was like, man, I think I might have to finally bite the bullet and just say, I think this may be one of those kind of final farewell. I'm going to write out my exemptions and come and hang out and shake hands and, you know, do the marketing thing. But as far as being a top performing athlete in the sport, you know, it's kind of like a see you bye at this point.
Yeah. Jesse, what are your thoughts on Tiger and any chance of playing golf regularly again?
Yeah. I've been of the pair of me and Sheridan, I've been the more realist for a while now. He's done. I don't know. It's hard for me to wrap my – I don't – obviously, Tiger Woods has a brilliant mind because he's Tiger Woods. He's one of the greatest golfers of all time. But I can't get my mind around how he doesn't adjust his swing and do things differently, lay off the weights, maybe do some yoga, whatever, to help his back out, and then also to not take 16-hour flights to – Dubai to get a paycheck. It's just none of it makes any sense to me. And I can't watch it anymore. And I don't want to watch it anymore. So, I mean, I hope he proves me wrong, but I just don't see it happening.
No, it was great to watch him struggle for about a month, you know, to see a player that was that dominant in their sport, their era, to go out and struggle and thin chips and hit golf balls all over the map. It was fun for a short amount of time. And now it's just old. It takes away from these younger players you guys talked about entering the game. It's great when he does tee it up, because guys that had followed Tiger and worshiped Tiger for so long actually can see the guy in person. And he's one of the only people I've ever seen in person that when you walk by them, you feel like there's a bubble around them, and that person is who they are for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I do think he's done.
Yeah, I agree with everything you guys said. I'm in Sheridan's camp to the point where I do want to see him play, not every day. Like, I agree he's taking away the limelight from what's the awesome golf we're seeing pretty much week in and week out. But he is great for the sport still. That's the problem. Like, people – like, you listen to, like Phils and all those guys, they still, like, bow down to Tiger because they knows what he did for the sport. So I'd like to see him out there once in a while, like full-time. No, stay away. Let the guys that can perform. But at the same time, stop toying with us, because this one didn't surprise anyone.
Right.
Like, everyone knew this was coming. It was more, are you going to really wait until Tuesday evening to tell us, or are you going to actually get off your ass and just know I can't do this? A bad back's a bad back. It doesn't take much to figure that out. So it's a shame. I just wanted to see your guys' two cents on this, but I don't know if we're going to see him at all the rest of the year personally, but it's a mess, absolutely a mess. He just needs to go back to Perk and start eating some pie and banging some waitresses, maybe the back one.
Bring Stevie back.
Yeah, he better stay on his back.
Yeah, the doctor prescribed him. The doctor said just lay down and stay on your back. The perfect recipe. Oh, okay, moving on. Let's move on to the Masters, and kind of a segue from Tigers. The other night on Golf Channel, they were showing Masters highlights, and it was Tigers just demolishing Augusta round. I think it was 97 or whatever it was. Yeah. And it was insane watching those highlights and how young he was and the shots he was making. It was disgusting. We'll start with Jesse. Let's go around the horn.
Masters. What makes that 97 round right now?
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, it's fun to watch. Jesse, we'll kick it off with you. What makes the Masters such a special event for you?
I really think you have to go there to understand how special it really is. It's unlike any place I've ever been in my whole entire life. And I've been to a lot of golf courses. I've been to a lot of places around the country. And it's just one of those places when you walk in, you know, you're in a different world. And it's that to watch the golf there all week too is just something else, because that you'll never find a golf course that's as manicured, as nice, and with the people who are there. You know, it's an amazing experience. When I went a couple years ago, it was, you know, it changed my outlook completely on the Masters. But I really would put that on your bucket list. If you're thinking of something to do golf wise, just put that number one and go there.
What about you, Kevin? You've been to Augusta 7-8 times, you said. So what's so special about the Masters for you?
Oh gosh, I think for me, being a PGA pro and being able to go and enjoy it for free and having the opportunity to go as much as I want, it never gets old. You get there, and for your first experience there, you walk out, you walk past the concession stand, you walk by the merchandise tent, and you see the big white scoreboard that has all the continents flags, country flags, and you get out to the first hole, and you can see some of the topography, some of the terrain, and you get to the first tee box, and you look out, and it's just like, wow. You know, TV, like they say, doesn't do it justice. Just the feeling of that place. Walking the grounds, eating a pimento cheese sandwich or an egg salad sandwich, buying a beer for $2. Just the whole aura of Augusta and the fact that so much history is at Augusta. And, it's so cool. You can't really put into words why it's so cool, but it's just it's a place you have to see.
Yeah, it seems amazing on TV. Someday it is on my bucket list, like Jesse said. So someday I'll make the trip. Sheridan, you've been a few times as well. You said you have connections with the family. What makes the Masters so special for you?
I think every time I walk through those gates, I mean, it's like literally the first time I've ever been there. It's just like Kevin said, the whole Tiger aura thing. I get that when I walk through the gates at Augusta. I mean, it's like I'm on hallowed grounds. Like, you just feel different. And people that walk around, I don't think I've ever heard anybody have a single bad thing to say or having a bad day while they're there. It's like the happiest place on earth for that week. So it's just neat to see how majestic that place is. And you know, during the practice rounds of the par three tournament's not going on, I mean, you can just look over at, you know, the par three course that's sitting there, and it's like any golfer's paradise. Like, if I could die and just go hang out over there, I mean, that'd be the place I'd want to do it at. You know, I mean, it's cool. And TV really does not do that place justice. I mean, if there is anything that you can think of that should be taken care of on a golf course, they've already done it and been doing it for 25 years. So it's incredible.
Yeah. Everybody knows I'm like a diehard big time baseball guy, and PGA golf, it's a close, probably second or 1B second for me. But the way you guys are describing all of that, the closest I can relate to is like when I walked into Wrigley for the first time. I remember seeing the outfield and the ivy and everything, and it feels just like – it's like an aura about it. But I would like to compare the two someday. Maybe I will make the trip. But with that being said, let's see if I can make this work. And we will start off our Masters preview. Nope, we can't because TV sucks. All right. We're going to start off with the course preview. And since Kevin and Sheridan have been there many times, have a good idea of the course, I'll let you guys take it away. Whoever wants to go first or second, doesn't matter to me, but I'll let you guys roll with that.
Well, it doesn't matter to me. I think a pretty tough opening stretch, wouldn't you say, Sheridan, that if you miss that ball right off the tee at all, you're looking at a six pretty quick. If you're going to miss it there, you might as well get it over there as close to nine as you can. Rope hook it if you have to. But you hit that ball right at that bunker, man, you're looking at starting your Masters with a double pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I mean, it's probably one of the most intimidating opening tee shots that anybody and everybody knows they're going to hit. It's like, how do you prep for that? And you just have to step up and show it. But even then, I mean, you get out there in the fairway, that second shot's just as intimidating. I think that's kind of the theme, the whole loop around. I mean, you could pure one down the middle, and these greens are so mentally challenging. You have to hit it in the size of a coaster in certain places, and it's gone. But to your point, the opening stretch, I mean, you come back down on two, and you're like, eh, it's all downhill. I got a shot. But then you look at that green, and you could set a ball down on the left side of it, and it's going in the gallery on the right side of the green. So it's incredible, man.
Yeah, and then you got number three, obviously, the fairly short, pretty cool hole. You know, they try and make it drivable. Some of the guys can get there for a couple of days of the tournament. Always pretty exciting on Sunday when they move it up some. Mm-hmm. And four, it happens every year that a guy in contention or a guy near the top of the lead makes a big number on four. It's such a hard par three, and they put that pin right over top of that bunker, and you know, Phil left in the bamboo a couple of years ago, and Tiger down that bunker shore of the flag a couple of years ago. I mean, it happens every year. Someone makes a number on number four, and you're like, oh, crap, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, to your point on four, I mean, if they push them back, you're sitting there 240. I mean, you could be coming off a short par four, and then now I got to hit one of the most intimidating par three shots of the day, and it's my first one. But I mean, then you step up on five, and I mean, the bunkers on the left side of five, man, it looks like there's two school buses stacked on top of each other. If you're sitting in the bottom of it, you can't even see. You can't see out of it. You just about have to say, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to have to hit this one backwards. I mean, it's crazy. But the green on five. Green.
Yeah, probably the most underrated green on the entire golf course.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's so sloping front to back, and balls, they just can't get them back there far enough, it seems. You always see guys come up short on that hole, and then you can even see chips roll back to their feet from the front of that green. I mean, then you step down to six, which six is probably one of my favorite greens on the course, just because from the bottom front left corner of that green to the top back right, I mean, you're talking about maybe 20 feet of elevation change. And they shove that pin back right. Guy gets a nervous pull in there. I mean, it's a long day and a quick four.
Yeah, yeah. And seven's probably one of the most natural-looking holes out there, real tight corridors. You still can miss the fairway there and make a birdie, but much easier from the fairway on that hole. I guess it was, what, 3-4 years ago now, and Tiger and Phil made a late Sunday run, and both those guys hit in the tree there and both made three. I think Phil almost holed out from that right side. And that's such a cool hole to see. And eight, you know, it's, I think it's the only hole in the course without a bunker. And see anything from eagles to bogeys there. Not many bogeys, but you do see some typically on Sunday.
And then you just bring it on into nine. And, I mean, this is where you can start getting a feel for that elevation change, because you can be sitting kind of at the bottom of nine and looking back up at the clubhouse, and it's like you're looking up on a mountaintop. I mean, it's incredible. Not a real crazy big number par four. I mean, I think the cumulative scoring average on it's like 4.15. So I mean, it's not a crazy challenging hole. But then, I mean, you step over to 10, and it's right back to business. I mean, you gotta walk right past that huge scoreboard, take a look over, and see what your peers are doing. But then you step up on four, straight dogleg left, tons and tons of bunkers between you and the green. And then, I mean, we've all know the shot that everybody talks about, but you lose one right over there. I think there's only one man in the history of the game that's played the course that knows how to get out of there, but right to jail. and then I think we can take a brief pause, and if you want to bring us in on the favorite part of the course, at least from TV's perspective, Bubba, if you want to introduce it.
Oh. It won't work. I tried loading it up, but I believe you're referring to Amen Corner, and yeah, quite popular deal. But yeah, no, YouTube is broken right now.
All good, all good. Well, number 11, man, it is such a long par four. I mean,
it's a four and a half
of 10. Yeah, par four and a half, no doubt. I mean, probably one of, honestly, in my opinion, probably one of the more difficult tee shots on this course, just because you're looking at auto bogey if you're anywhere but perfect, because, I mean, it's 505 yards. I'm looking at the 2016. It was right on point with Kevin says par four and a half. I mean, that was average 4.5 on the hole. But you've got everything sloping. To your left, you've got the pond guarding the green to the left. They've got a – devilish place bunker right there. So, I mean, you absolutely have to hit the perfect approach shot, and then you know what lurks right behind it. Even if you come off a bogey, you walk into the most difficult par three on the course. Kevin, you want to talk about number 12?
Gosh, it's a beautiful hole, isn't it? Stood back there on the tee, you just look, and you see the azaleas back behind the green, back behind 13T, and it doesn't appear like it's that difficult, but I guess until you strike a shot there, you just really truly don't know how tough of a shot it is. You know, see anything from doubles and triples coming down the stretch Sunday to a lot of guys making two there. They just have it dialed in. They know that yardage, and it's not that tough of a shot. Probably the other than seven at Pebble, the most famous par three out there.
No doubt. And I think, too, when that wind gets swirling, I think that's when you see a lot of guys kind of pucker up, because, I mean, there's been times where, you know, I think the video game Tiger Woods did the best job replicating the hole. I think if anybody's ever played it, they used to have the wind odometer thing. It would just sit there and spin. But you can sit there in that grandstand behind the tee box and literally watch the trees blow from left to right when guys are sitting there trying to hit the most important, you know, maybe knock down nine of the day. But then, I mean, you take that walk, that lonely walk back to 13 after a bogey. There's not a soul back there. I think there may be one CentOS security guard or something back there to kind of hold your hand. But you get back there and you got to hit, you know, a very, very difficult tee shot, knowing that, you know, that could, you know, dictate whether or not you can try and get to 13 and two or not. I think we've only seen a few guys go right and make use of it. But, I mean, it demands a high draw for right-handers, and I think you just got to be able to place one out there and hope to maybe have a long iron in your hand to take a stab at it. But, I mean, even then you're guarded by the infamous creek that's swallowed a lot of golf balls and taken away a lot of Masters dreams. So,
yeah, it's such a cool stretch right there, 12, 13, and you finish those holes and you go over to 14, if you've ever walked the place, you're like, man, this hole just, it's just a golf hole. It's nothing all that special, but That green makes that hole pretty fun to watch, especially on Sunday. They seem to always put that pin in the same spot and see a lot of balls funnel back to that hole. And typically see guys that win it make a pretty good run on 12, 13, 14, and then they go back to 15 and they get another chance for a par five.
Mm-hmm. I think 14 down the stretch is a definite must par. You got to kind of just keep it together and get through that hole and hope you can jump up to 15 and bust one. It's not the longest par five, but it's certainly a demanding one in the approach. I mean, we've all seen people short. You got the roars on 16 within earshot. I mean, you know, you got to make a run and you're sitting there trying to hit that shot and there's water on either side of it. And it's a very mentally challenging hole. Certainly one if you can make use of, though. An eagle gets you a long way. Eagle can sometimes feel like a two, you know, coming down the stretch. And then you step up on 16. We've all seen some miraculous things if we've watched enough tournaments that course happen. I think last year the Louis Oosthuizen hole-in-one with the bounce off JB, I know that certainly made Jesse and I really excited in some certain contests of ours. But, you cannot miss on that green. It's everything. I mean, it comes back to the water. If you're short, if you're long, you got the water sitting back there behind it. But it's fun to watch those guys try to throw it in there on the top right of the green and let it funnel back towards the front left of it for where the pin usually is. It's even fun if there's some listeners that are going to make it for the practice round, grab a seat, grab a beer, sit there and watch the guys walk down to the front of that tee box and skip the ball across. I mean, it's one of the more interesting things. I think that's the only place you may hear boos at Augusta is if the guys act like they're not going to actually skip one across the water. You're going to hear some guys getting booed, and they even make some caddies do it too. So it's just one of those fun things. If anybody's going to make it out, I'd highly recommend grabbing a seat and watching some of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool experience right there. It's pretty fun to see those guys do that. And the worst attempt I ever saw at it was my first time to Augusta, and Kirk Triplett was there, and everyone's chanting, skip it, skip it. He walks up to the front of the tee box, takes his ball, throws it in the water, and skips all the way to the green. And he got heckled and booed his entire skipping to the green. It was great. he was the only person all day that we sat there, and he didn't actually skip the ball.
Yeah, what's even more sickening, I think, is I've seen three hole-in-ones on that hole at practice rounds of people doing it. And, you know, I've been playing golf for about 25 years, and I've yet to have one. But, you know, a guy can skip it across and run one up on the front of the green and dunk one and just makes, normal golfers' stomachs turn over.
You need to change your shot shape then and just go lower.
Start hitting the little rabbit chasers, skippers. That may be the key.
You got to play the course. You can't let the course play you. It's very simple.
That's the only way. Warm burn. You got to warm burn it in.
Take us home, boys.
After you get by 16, go to 17. You know, lost the Eisenhower tree a few years ago. But really not a whole lot of trouble. The trouble comes from guys missing the green, maybe short-sighting themselves on Sunday. Don't see many big numbers there, really, but you do see the occasional birdie that kind of vaults the guy to victory. In 18, the tee shot is unbelievably tight, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, especially when you watch on TV after being there, and even if you go there after having seen it on TV, you just wonder how they fit that many people in that small, confined of a space. But then you're talking about hitting down a 150-yard shoot line 10 deep behind the ropes. I mean, and you know, those late Sunday rounds, those guys, I mean, it's got to feel like hitting it down a hallway. But – you know, you get past the gallery, you're sitting there looking at having to hit, trying to avoid the miss right. I think that's one of the biggest misses that you see guys make, trying to peel one off the corner and have a shorter wedge in their hand. And you see them end up over in those trees. And I think there was a couple of years ago, it was Angel and Kenny. I think they got over in the extra holes and got kind of jammed up in that tree over there. And, you know, without anything miraculous happening, it's all but jail, and you're pretty much done from that right side of 18. But then you got to hit into that green. It's an uphill second shot. You got two bunkers guarding it. And, you know, Lord help us if we all had to hit that, you know, on a Sunday round trying to close out the Masters. But it is certainly, I would say, probably one of the most famous finishing holes, no doubt.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a hell of a course preview there, hole by hole. It doesn't seem like there's a bad spot out there. I want to go to Jesse real quick. They gave their definition of it, or their idea and preview of Amen Corner. Jesse, you've been there as well. Is it all it's cracked up to be on TV, or would you prefer somewhere else on the course?
Oh, Amen Corner? Yeah, you can't beat it, especially if you – like if, when you walk down in between 11 and 12 greens, or well, you're standing behind 12 tee and kind of off to the right of 11 green, it's awe-inspiring. You know, the one thing about this golf course is the par threes are difficult. I didn't realize how difficult number four was until Sheridan took me up there and we stood behind it. And I watched dudes hit shots off of it, taking long irons. And that is because if you miss it either way, you're in bad shape. And it's a long hole, especially on a Sunday, with the green jacket on the line. You know, that's an early place to hiccup for guys. But 11 is probably the most difficult. I wish we could get back up there, because I don't know. Can we get up to 11 tee box? I can't remember if you can or not.
Yeah,
you can get on the right side of it.
Because that's like a shoot, almost like 18 getting out through there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And if you miss it left, you're pretty well gone. And you can miss it right, but you're going to be in trees and you're going to be in pine straw, and then you're really going to be in jail trying to get down to that green for your approach shot. And then obviously when you go to 12, we all saw what happened to Jordan Spieth last year. That can happen, you know, to anybody. But at the same time, you know, I think Freddie Couples a couple years ago hit his short and it rolled back and just stayed barely above it. And I think he went on to win the jacket that year because he stayed out. And then the other thing about 12 too, not 12, 13, it's the double tier green, correct?
Yeah.
So, you know, you can get into some bad spots there on that, on that green as well, if you're not putting it in the right spot on your approach there. So it's just an awe inspiring, awesome golf course. It's the mecca of golf.
Good. One last question. We'll move on. For all three of you, we'll go in order. It's like a quick hits question. If you had to pick one place during the round, and we won't say final round because 18 would be obvious, I would think. Maybe not. But you only get one spot to sit at for the entire day. Where would you sit? Where would you recommend someone sitting? We'll start with you, Jesse, and we'll go around the horn.
Amen Corner, between 11 and 12.
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the coolest spot to sit and watch shots all day is guys hitting their approach shot into 11 and watching the tee shot on 12. But I will say, if you're going for your first time, the best thing to do is go to the first tee, walk the entire golf course, mm-hmm. grab a beer when you walk in. After the third hole, there's another beer station. You get a beer and a sandwich. Walk 4, 5, 6. You can get another beer and a sandwich. Walk 7, 8, 9. Get back to the top. Get a beer and a sandwich. You walk down 10, 11, get to Amen Corner. There's another spot for a beer and a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it, you're feeling pretty good. You've seen a lot of the golf course, and you probably only spent $12.
I was getting ready to say, your pocket hadn't been hammered yet.
That's what I'm jealous about, is how cheap stuff is there. It's unbelievable, and that's how it should be everywhere, but that's amazing. That's the kind of stuff you get on Bench with Bubba, is where to get your beers, people. That's the important stuff.
Yeah. I'll say one other spot.
You can't stop there, because once you pass Amen Corner, you can get another beer. Yeah. 16 tee, I believe. Then you can finish your walk. Once you get to the top 18, it's a pretty easy walk back down from 18 to Amen Corner. And of the 7 times I've been there, I've walked from 1 through 18 every single time. It doesn't get old.
Awesome. What about you, Sheridan?
I couldn't agree more with Kevin. Walk the entire course and just take it in. But one of the more underrated spots to sit to outside of Amen Corner, because that's where, you know, the big place is. But sitting on the kind of the left side of the grandstand facing 15 green from 16 tee. You can watch those guys hitting their shots into 15 green, and you can also see the play on 16. And if you sit far enough left of the grandstand, you can even catch some of the tee shots into the 6 green as well. So you can kind of catch all three of those. But definitely spend some time in Amen Corner. There's a beer everywhere you turn, and try as much stuff as you can in the concession stand, because I've yet to have one bad thing from it.
Right.
Well, now that you're talking concession stands, Virginia Wino asked us, is it egg salad or pimento and cheese? What are your favorites? Which one do you prefer?
I'm egg salad.
Egg salad.
Egg salad. Pimento cheese is very, very rich.
How much are these sandwiches?
$2.
Two and a quarter?
Jeez. How do you get in for
people
free?
Don't believe it. They don't believe it.
The only bad part of the egg salad sandwiches and all the beers is the car ride home with a bunch of guys.
I was about to say, you've by your tour, you've had about 10 to 12 beers and like 6 sandwiches. That's going to be a rough ride home.
Yeah.
I have mercy on the designated driver. Like, that person's earning their badge right. That day. Okay, let's wrap these two together. Jesse, give us a little recap of last year's Masters and what to look for as we start targeting golfers for our DFS lines.
Obviously, last year the big story was Jordan Spieth again and what happened on 12 with him, which opened the door for Danny Willett to – kind of come sneak in there with a nice Sunday round, and end up with the win. Everybody still talks about 12, and I don't know what kind of mental hurdle that's going to be for Jordan this year, but we'll see on that. I hope everybody fades him in DraftKings. Also too, Smiley missed a putt on the last hole, for par, which cost me and Sheridan quite a bit of money. Other than that, this year, obviously going into it, once again, Jordan Spieth. So second, Jordan Spieth he's once again going to be the talk of the Masters early on here. And then Dustin Johnson, obviously he's going to be a big favorite. He's right now the pretty overall betting favorite as far as odds go in Vegas. And then there's a lot of Euro guys out there too, and I hope we get to talk about those. But you know, the things I'm going to be looking for in my golfers when I'm going to pick them this year or this week, how are they putting? Number one, they talked about in the course preview about how difficult these greens are, but you really have to be able to putt, and especially lag putt. I'm not talking about making everything. I'm talking about not three putting or 6 putting like Ernie Els. I think he had a 6 putt last year, didn't he?
Yeah, he started the tournament with it and still made the cut, right?
Yeah, he still made the cut somehow. 6 putted at number one. And then guys, we got to get guys who are good overall short game, especially with the scrambling. And then actually Sheridan and I were talking about this beforehand, and they talked about it during the course preview without actually saying it, but driving accuracy. You got to be able to place the golf ball around this golf course. You'll be able to shape it in different places. And so we're looking at guys who aren't necessarily long, because that's not a huge requirement. The golf course plays just over 7,400 yards. So guys who can place the ball well are going to be top of my list as well.
Nice. You guys looking for anything different when you're picking your DFS lineups?
No, I mean, I'm a huge course history guy. I have the opinion that even if your game sucks, but you come to a place that you love and you typically play well at, it's going to revive your game a little bit. If a buddy tells me, hey, we're going to go play this course today, and I hate the place, I know I'm probably not going to have a very good round. But you look at guys that always play well at Augusta, Westwood, Rory, Spieth, guys that have a track record of playing well there almost every time they tee it up. I would tend to stick more with guys that have good course history.
Yeah, there's something to that. I give my guys a hard time all the time. At our home course here, I can walk out there without playing for a couple of weeks and probably shoot I'm not a handicap like you guys. I'm actually a slapstick. But I can shoot bogey golf pretty easily, if not a little better. I go out to a course I haven't played in a few years, and it could be a disaster in a heartbeat. So there's a lot to be said about that. Sheridan, anything else you're looking for on the course?
No, I think just Jesse touched on it a little bit, but just that kind of that three-putt avoidance, just even if you do miss a green, because it's not a matter of if you'll miss greens, it's just when, and being able to scramble. I think scrambling is a huge underrated stat, because you've got a lot of guys who can place balls all over the place on the greens on some of these courses that aren't as undulated, but if you can scramble, I think you can certainly save yourself some strokes, and I think that's going to be a big stat. I love the driving accuracy stat as well.
All right, let's get into some DFS talk. Look, DraftKings, obviously. As you know, Jesse provides the DFS preview every week. Kevin provides some information weekly. It's tons of good stuff, and if you guys are paying attention to it, it's definitely helping you out. We'll do a quick run-through. A couple of tiers of golfers. We'll start with the 10K guys. For 10K, we have Day, McIlroy, Johnson, and Smith over 10K. Let's go around the horn every time on this. We'll start with Jesse. What's your one guy, your top guy over 10K that you're going to be building around?
I just can't not do Jordan again. I'm thinking that people are going to see what happened last week and obviously what happened on 12 last year and think twice about rostering him, and that's my thinking going into this. That might change as the week progresses, but Jordan's my guy at this point.
What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, it's hard to ignore Jordan. It's going to be certainly hard to ignore DJ, but I think everyone, when they look at it, will probably have DJ much higher owned than Spieth. You get, $200 discount on a guy that is playing a hell of a lot better than Spieth right now. But I think I'm going to be more heavy on Rory. I can't trust Jason Day at all right now. He's been pretty iffy since a spectacular year, year and a half, really. But I think I'm going to go more with Rory this year.
I like that. He's been playing some crazy good golf. Crazy good golf. Sheridan, who are you targeting in the top four, basically?
I'm going to have to back a little bit onto Jesse's side here and say Spieth, just hoping that a lot of people don't ride him as hard and hope that he can kind of channel that mental focus and produce some of the similar results he's done in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's hard not to go with any of those top three. They're all playing some pretty phenomenal golf. So there's really no wrong answer, I would imagine. There's probably certain statistics you can look at or whatever. It's going to, Jesse's got his model and stuff. There's probably a lot more to it than just that. You can't really go wrong with any. This is for anybody involved. Is Jason Day even officially playing, or is he still with his mom? Because I don't know if they've – because when he left match play, he said he didn't know if he was going to be back for the Masters. Is he even playing this week? Anybody?
I haven't heard. I don't know.
I think he's playing. The last I heard, he was playing. But it's got a lot to do with his mom and her health. So the WD chance is way higher with him than anybody else in the field, I would imagine, at this point.
Oh, yeah, if he has a rough round one, gone.
And even if he does play, I mean, where's his head going to be at? It just makes it hard to imagine a guy with that much on his plate at home being able to focus on one of the most mentally challenging golf courses in the world.
Yeah, it probably sounds pretty petty of us to all say it, but as he probably hasn't even picked up a golf club since he flew out of Mexico or whatever, so who knows what's going on there. But let's go to the 9K range. We have four golfers: Rose, Fowler, Stenson, our favorite Stenson, and Matsuyama. Kick us off, Jesse. Who's your top 9K guy?
Rose is my guy. I'm probably going to be pretty heavy with him, especially even in cash games. The course history is outstanding, and he made a nice little comeback round today at the Shell Houston, so gave me a little bit more hope. But I'm finished second here back in 2015, 10th. Last year, so he's going to be my dude in that range.
He's been about as consistent as they come week in and week out. He'll make the cut. He's at worst a top 20 guy most weeks, if not higher. So you know he's going to place for you pretty well unless something crazy happens. Kevin, what are you looking at in top 9 guys?
I agree with Rose. You know, he's kind of the forgotten guy in all those names that he typically goes a lot lower owned than most guys. He's a cup maker. He played well Thursday in Houston. And, course, history speaks for itself. I think if I wasn't going to play Rose, I'd probably lean with Ricky here. Playing well and awfully hard to trust Henrik right now.
Who are you looking at, Sheridan?
It's hard to go against a guy like Rose. I mean, I think he's adjusted round on between the courses. I think he's, you know, thinking his course history, I think he's almost a full two shots better than the other guys in that 9K price range. I think another guy, too, that I'd have to maybe even consider a little bit is Hideki. I think he could fly under the radar, especially some guys are trying to construct a lineup where they maybe do go Spieth or DJ. I think you have to give Hideki a little bit of a nod, too.
From an ownership perspective, that's a very, very good point because he's finished seventh and fifth here the last 2 years. Myself, I'd rather take the $700 discount and go with Rose, but I think Hideki is somebody who definitely could fly under the radar and not be as quote-unquote popular in the DFS world.
Yeah, no, that's a great point because you look at Hideki, he was basically unstoppable for a while. He's kind of, you know, spiraled lately, not Stenson-esque, but he's spiraled. So a lot of people might be scared off him. He hasn't played in a few weeks, so no one really – you know, a lot of these players aren't, you know, diehards like you guys are, so they're just looking at what the recent thing they've seen on TV. So they haven't seen Hideki around.
Right.
The other thing is like you said, his ownership, even when he was hot, if there was enough big names in the group, he still was low-owned every time. Like, yeah. It was crazy. But something I want to bring up, you mentioned Fowler, Kevin, and everybody likes Rose, and there's no reason not to like Rose. You could almost, if you want to make a GPP lineup on your own or whatever, or a cash lineup, don't even go to the top guys. Start with Fowler-Rose combo and go from there. That's just my two cents, but something to think about. My point I'm trying to make in a long-winded way is people don't always have to get the big-name guys at the top. You can build elsewhere. And I did that a couple weeks ago in a tournament. I think I did all 8K or below. I had like $3,000 left over, and all six made the cut, and I cashed. Like, I didn't win it, but there's ways to make money.
Right. Yeah. All right. Definitely.
Agreed.
So when you're talking about something like the Millie Maker, which is obviously the big popular deal this year, you have to think outside the box. Like, you've got to be different somehow, some way, because you're playing all the chalk is not going to win you the $1 million. You got to figure something else out. And like you said, starting maybe Rose Ricky is not a bad place if you're starting a Millie team.
Both guys could definitely get the job done out there. And obviously, Dustin's playing so well and Spieth's playing so well. There's a reason they're priced so high. Would you be surprised if they won? Hell no. But
right.
To win the cha-cha, you got to do it all. Speaking of that, let's get into some guys that you're going to need to go off to help build your team. The 8K range, about 10 golfers in the 8K range. Jesse, who are you – give us a couple names you're targeting in the 8K range.
I'll be on John Rahm. I don't care if it's his first time or not. He's just too good of a golfer. In reality, I think he should probably be, you know, about 10K. So the price discount there is well worth it, in my opinion. And then I'll have some surge and definitely be looking at Louis Oosthuizen again quite a bit. He's got really good course history, 8,100. And then a guy who, if it's raining a lot, which the forecast right now is not good, if you look at Thursday and Friday, and a guy who plays well in the wind and likes and does okay is Brant Snedeker, and he might potentially fly on the radar this year. Course history okay, but like I said, those the weather factor is something that might put me a little bit more on Brant.
A couple things on that is, yeah, Rahm. The only thing that worries me about Rahm because the price is so stupid low ownership-wise, but he's about as dominant as they are. And when you're building your lineups, another thing is you can't try to be contrarian on all six plays. You can take a couple that you can be pretty confident in and still be just fine. So I want to reiterate that. Sergio, right. I was shocked at how cheap he is. I know his putting's been off, but the guy's been contending week in and week out. But I see a smirk on his face over there, so he might have something to say about Sergio. But Sneds, I love the Sneds call. That guy, he's sneaky, and he's always around. His putter's there. Worth a shot. Kevin, what are you looking at?
Yeah, so I bet Sergio every single major. Just whatever it is. Okay. Put me in.
It's got to happen sometime, right?
I like Ryan. It's going to happen some point. He's not going to pull a Westwood and never not win one. He's going to get one. But talk about those 8K guys. I just built a lineup. Sergio, Scott, Snedeker, Rom, and that leaves me enough money for a guy who hits a big high draw, Jimmy Walker. And that's a pretty darn good lineup. It may be maybe out there three or four times in the tournament, but it's pretty damn good squad.
That's what I'm saying. There's a bit of golfers out here. You don't have to go crazy.
Yeah, and you know, with the threat of weather, if there is a bunch of rain, you probably have to watch out for some of those guys that don't hit as far. Zach Johnson cost me a lot of money here 1 year when he won. Mm-hmm. So I tend not to pick Zach very often. I think he does a lot better here when it's fast and firm and he can get it out there a little bit. But if the weather is nasty and a little bit more wet, then I don't like his chances. So I like some bombers this week, and I like guys that aren't afraid to go deep, and that squad isn't afraid to go deep.
Yeah, definitely. Sheridan, who are you looking at?
Really love Brent Snedeker just for the price. Give me a discount at a flat 8K for a guy who's just – he's a perennial mutter. He he knows how to get it done, and he doesn't ever seem to get too rattled. I mean, he's right down the pipe. And the guy, when his putter gets hot, I mean, he's lights out. I think a guy, too, that just has to at least get some consideration. I think Kevin may have mentioned it in that lineup, but give me Mickelson, channeling some of those previous wins.
How do you ever avoid him here? You can't ever avoid him in Augusta.
Agreed. And I think a guy, too, that, you know, we talked a little bit about it for some of those guys that come in that course history. I mean, Bubba, I mean, you talked a little bit about it, Bubba, talking about guys that, you know, these everyday, you know, people who watch it more on TV. What have I seen lately? I hadn't seen a ton of Bubba, but what I have seen is Bubba come to Augusta and just kind of channel that, you know, that mental fortitude that's got him through in the past. So it's hard to avoid him too.
Well, and his last time out, he played better. They finally came out and said he was playing with a Titleist ball, and now he can't use his pink ball here. I know this is all just semantics, but he does play really well there. And if you want another low ownership guy, he should be, because people hate him. And like you said, he hasn't been on TV. So there's another guy to look at. He does play very well there. If the weather is as bad as you guys are saying, you want more less bombers is what you guys are talking bombers. About?
I go more bombers.
More bombers.
Okay. Agreed.
Okay.
More bombers.
I mean, they're calling right now. It's supposed to be raining. There's thunderstorms coming in Thursday or Wednesday, and then a chance of rain on Thursday. But wind is going to be the issue. Wind is going to be the issue the first 2 days. Pretty strong wind. So,
okay. Before we go to the next level, then we're going to get some insider info real quick. If it's raining and there's a delay, Kevin, which bar should they go to?
I haven't spent too much time outside the gates of Augusta. It's typically get there as fast as I can and get on the grounds.
There's nothing like on site?
No bars on site unless you're lucky enough to have Berkman's passes, which is pretty special, but there are not many passes to go around, so you're probably not rushing to Berkman's. There's a Hooters not far away where you typically see John Daly set up for the week.
He'll be
outside the ground. He'll be there this year, I think. And I want to say that Tangaray's got something going on with Snoop being down there this week.
Oh,
I read somewhere that outside the gates, I can't remember which parking lot, but Tangaray is hosting Snoop for the week.
Well, now we're talking so, Snoop.
Yeah, there you go.
Another low-key spot. I'll just throw it in real quick. T-Bones. Good steak. You'll see a lot of players roll through there too. So if you're down there looking for a good steak meal, hit up T-Bones. Grab you a meal. Got to sit down and have a little conversation with Graham McDowell a few years ago. You know, you just see these guys come in, and it's cool. It's like they get sucked into the Augusta aura too. I mean, they're all just in good moods, it seems like.
Sweet. Okay, let's go to the 6K, 7K range. Basically, the rest of the golfers, your value plays, whatever. Jesse, kick us off with a handful of guys. Like, a lot of your Euros are here. A lot of them are priced way lower than I feel they should be. I don't know how your thoughts are, but a lot of quality guys, including our favorite, What do you got in mind?
I'll be playing. I'll be probably trying to pick up a lot of the guys in this range. I'm probably will have zero Danny Willett, only because he's just not that good at golf right now. But other than that, like, I'll have Peters, Hatton. He's going to be pretty popular, though. So you got to take, I think you have to have a little bit of exposure to Hatton myself. I think Brooks could be sneaky good this week if he can putt. And we're going to try to find him on the golf course and see if he's actually making any putts when we're down there on Tuesday. And then Fitzpatrick, another good guy. I'll have some Grillo. I know I'll leave the Cabrera Bello panting up to Sheridan. Martin Keimer. Martin Keimer is a guy who his course history isn't that great.
He can't hit a draw. You got to draw it around Augusta.
I'm with you. But I just have a feeling about Martin Keimer this year. I don't know. I just have a feeling about him. Could be way off on that. But I'll have some of him. I'm not going to go over super overweight on him. And then I got some sneaky plays down here. Well, not sneaky. I mean, I know you're big on Hadwin, Bubba, already, and I know he'll be a very popular play. But a guy that I'm looking at quite a bit, he's never played here. I just have a feeling about him. Long story short, last year, Kirdek Appy Barnrot won me a lot of money. And I think I found this year Appy Barnrot, and I think it's Jung Hung Wang. Just another feeling. I'm telling you, just another feeling.
Nice, Kevin. What are some of the lower price guys you're looking into?
I like Kisner, local guy. Plays at Palmetto Golf Club, just north of Augusta. Played there last year, did okay. But I like Kisner's game. I think he could be pretty good around Augusta. Obviously, you know, Lee Westwood has a pretty darn good track record around Augusta. Trying to find those guys that are ball strikers and can place it on the right quadrants of the green. At Augusta, you know, it's not just about hitting greens. It's about hitting the right section of the greens. And Lee can do that. Certainly Sergio can do it too. That's why you got to really try and find those guys that are superb ball strikers. Bill Haas, playing well. Like Bill's game around Augusta, he's not afraid to hit a pretty good draw. And Berger too. I do like some Berger this week.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Haas. I was going to ask you about him. Haas has been playing some of the most consistent golf out there, period. So I was very curious about that one. Sheridan, what are you looking into in the lower price?
There's a couple. Some of them have already been mentioned. I'll dip down and maybe give Webb a few nods. I think, you know, just overall, he's had relatively decent course history here. If his putter gets hot, I mean, I think he could certainly be there come Sunday. There's a guy that I always love to follow every time I'm down there too, in that 7K range, Ryan Moore. He just seems one of those guys who's kind of at peace, usually all the time when he's on the course, but something about Augusta just seems to kind of tame him down. He's kind of a low-risk guy. You don't ever see him do anything too crazy on the golf course, but he's had decent history there. There's a couple more. I kind of like a little bit of Duffner as well. Hadn't had supreme good course history, but, you know, his numbers kind of line up. Rafa, I know Jesse kind of gave me some flack for that, but I think he has a chance to go low on just given what happened last week. You know, but you got to question sometimes how bad those guys want to be at those places when they know one of golf's first and biggest majors of the year lurks around the corner. Maybe one of those kind of looking forward rounds when he had his shell performance. I like Berger too, though. I was glad somebody brought him up. I think he's had a decent performance there, but his numbers look good to me too.
Okay. There's a bunch of guys I could ask questions on, but we don't need to go through the whole roster. We can figure that out later, hit you guys up or whatever. One name I am going to ask about, because I've seen it all over the place, for $6,300, is anybody rostering Freddie Couples? A lot of people have talked about him, so I was wondering.
No, not this time.
Okay. I won't go below Sean O'Hare. I mean, I'm not rostering any of these old guys and their geriatricness they got going on.
That's what
below I was 65. Yeah. Not dealing with it.
All right.
Freddie's very easy to root for, but I don't know if it is worth putting your money on to root for him.
I completely agree with that. Completely agree. Let's get into the top chalk plays. What are you thinking are some of the top chalk plays of the week?
I mean, I think DJ ends up being the highest owned up top. I think he's easily going to be above and beyond. He probably in Millie Maker is going to be 30 to 40%, which is a lot in the Millie Maker. And then I think probably surprisingly the second highest owned guy might be Hadwin, to be honest with you.
I don't like
$600 for a guy who's playing as good as he is. People are going to see that and they're going to roster DJ Hadwin almost immediately. So you got to think outside the box. If you're starting there, you're going to have to get real crazy in order to be different.
Recent form, Hadwin is the second best player in the world right now.
Yep. I've been on Hadwin. I know Jesse has. I don't know if you guys, I'm assuming you guys have had some exposure. I've been on him since before he won a tournament. And I keep thinking, as well as he's playing, he's so cheap, and no one owns him. I guess it's insane.
Something against Canada, I guess.
He's gonna be chalky. If you're playing in higher dollar tournaments, Rory might be more owned than DJ. I'm talking about 300 and above. But if you're in lower dollar entry fees, DJ is gonna be the highest price or the highest owned, I think by far.
What are some of the chalk you're looking at, Kevin?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think DJ is by far going to be the highest owned. Just looking at the top tier guys, I told you this before we went on air, but it's so hard to believe that Spieth is priced higher than DJ right now. Yeah. I think people will see that and will instantly just jump to DJ. Other than that, I think there'll be a lot of ROM exposure. I think recent form and the fact that his name is so popular right now, he'll be owned quite a bit, especially being under $9,000. And then after that, it's pretty wide open. You know, it's almost a really small WGC type feel with, you're not going to roster any of the lowest guys. I mean, no one's going to go on there and roster Larry Mize, Sandy Lyle, Marco Mira, Ian Woosnam. You're not going to see much of that. So the field's really reduced by a lot. So the ownership numbers will be higher than you're used to.
What's the cut here? Is the cut here top 50 and
low 50 in ties?
Yeah,
or within 10 strokes of the lead.
Okay.
Top 50 ties within 10 strokes.
So you'll see a ton of guys. I think it might be one of the highest events that have 6 of 6 making the cut.
Yeah.
So not only do you have to have all 6 guys, you're probably going to have 3 or 4 guys inside the top 10 to make a bunch of money.
Interesting. Sheridan, what's some of the chalk you're looking at, maybe outside of DJ?
I'm kind of leaning towards seeing a lot of Ricky lineups, especially in lower dollar tournaments. I think he's kind of one of those people that seems like the younger crowd tend to root for. He's just got that flash, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him higher owned. Outside of that, I'd say agree with Jesse. Lower dollar amounts, again, you probably see a lot of Rory. I think a lot of people want to see him get it done. So those are the two guys I think I'll be seeing some chalk in, especially in lower dollar plays.
Okay, Jesse, what's your top dart of the week?
I already mentioned him, but this is – I'm not saying go all in on this guy by any means whatsoever. But my dude, Jung-Hung Wang, I'm telling you, he's going to be sneaky. He's right down there at 6,900 right beside Hadwin, so everybody's going to be clicking Hadwin. And Fleetwood's going to be popular as well. I think he's a good pivot. Do not go all in on him, please.
Don't blow up your Twitter handle either.
You can find him at DFS Golf Gods. I'm glad you clarified.
I'm telling you, I've just got a feeling about this guy.
when I do the baseball DFS, I can say, okay, there's these guys, but do not unload your bankroll on them, please. Like, this is why they are a dart. This is why they're a dart. Kevin, what are you looking at as your dart?
Well, a guy that not many people are going to talk about, but he's playing well and he's had some okay course history when he does play Augusta is Charlie Hoffman. Mm. 7,100. He's not afraid to go as low as anyone when he gets that putter rolling. He's pretty sneaky play, I think. You know, you got names on like Duffner and Ryan Moore and Webb Simpson and guys that people identify more with, J.B. Holmes. And so you see Kevin Na and guys like that, and you think, man, here's a good opportunity to go ahead and take a guy like Charlie Hoffman who's playing better than all those guys right now. And he'll probably be a lot lower on than most of those guys in that price range.
Real quick, what's your thoughts on
I'm sorry, on who?
On J.B. Holmes.
I like J.B. Hits a big cut, though. I'm not quite sure if I'd have a lot on him. He played well there last year. But I won't be on J.B. very much, if at all.
Okay. And Sheridan, what's your dart?
Supreme dart, Scott Pearson.
I like it. I was looking at him when you guys were talking about the lower price guys. I'm glad you mentioned Pearson. Kevin mentioned Hoffman. Those are two guys I had listed. I said I'll ask you guys later. This is beautiful. Okay. Before we get on to the last part, I wanted to mention something because, correct me if I'm wrong, has a first-timer ever won at Augusta?
Been over 50 years, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Because here's a list, people, if you're curious. Pat Mayo tweeted this out. John Rahm, Hatton, Peters, Norin, Hadwin, Summerhays, and Swafford. Most of those will be very popular. Does that dissuade you guys from playing them at all? Or some of those guys you could probably still see a top 5, top 10 out of, which will still help your team. Because they're all 80 below.
You're not expecting those guys to win. You just want them to make the cut and maybe top 20 or something like that. So I'm not worried about the only really big question mark is, do you want to pay up for John Rahm at 8,600? Because he's got to get top 10 in order to really pay off his salary. And is that possible? I mean, I think so. Is he going to win? Probably not, but he's a very good golfer, so who knows?
The only guy on that list I know I won't play is Summerhays.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think one guy, I don't know if you mentioned him or not, but Fleetwood, never played, but I think wouldn't be surprised if see him in top 10 finish.
Now, I like a lot of the Euro guys. I've used them quite a bit in recent tournaments as they've been over here. I know Grayson Murray disagrees and says they're over here because they're not that good. But they seem to perform when they're here, at least most of them do, and they seem to putt pretty well. And I know you guys said you need to be able to freaking putt pretty good at this place. So I like how Jesse mentioned earlier and you guys have talked about. There's some sneaky Euros I pay attention to. It seems like every tournament I do an all-Euro roster these days, and it's interesting.
But a guy, another guy, that's really super he missed the cut last year, but he played very, very well this past weekend. The only reason I know this is because he was on my FanDuel lineup and I was sitting there sweating him. Andy Sullivan, 7,000. He's not – he missed the cut here last year, but he played really, really well the last two rounds at the Houston Open. And the other thing is, too, if it's windy, you got to look at guys who are used to playing in wind,
So Matt Fitzpatrick speaks to that. I think he'd be a good play, too.
So would you say looking at guys that play good, like at the Open Championship, obviously?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into your picks, guys, that you guys might play to win, top 10s, whatever you guys are looking at on the board, guys you plan on doing well with. We'll go reverse order here. Sheridan, so that way they can't take all your picks. Sheridan, what are you looking at kind of gambling-wise if you're gonna place a wager and it was legal and all?
If I was in a situation like that, I'd probably have to sprinkle a little bit on Martin Keimer. Obviously, Jesse's giving me a hard time for Rafa, but I think I'd also like to take a little bit on Tyrrell Hatton. I think those are my three kind of long shot, sprinkle some in, maybe hit, try and catch them each way, you know, win top five, top 10. Those would probably be my three guys. And if you're going to give me odds on Hadwin at, I think I saw him 80-1, wouldn't be a bad one to sprinkle on either.
Ooh, I like that. But I have a hard on for Hadwin, so that's a whole other story. Kevin, you always have all kinds of picks, so I'm looking forward to this. My notes are ready. So what do you have?
Well, I'm still working on it. You'll see it on Twitter soon. But I am definitely already on Phil and Sergio. Took that a while Sergio? Back. Gosh, I think I got Sergio at 35-1.
He's 40 right now.
I got a 42-1.
So I'm going to have to get back on there and get some more, I'm afraid. That's not good.
they have you hooked.
But I'm afraid that I will be fading Keimer in any head-to-head that I can find, depending on who he's playing against. And hope it works out for one of us. Maybe I'll get all the ties in the head-to-head and you guys will win it outright somehow. I love Keimer. I play him a lot, and I like his game. I can't do it around Augusta. I've heard him say in person that he just doesn't think he can win there because he doesn't draw enough. And you know, when he was dominating there for a while, he changed his game to try and purposely hit the draw, and he went in the shitter for a while. It's tough. Stuff like that kind of sticks with me probably a little bit too long. But those are a couple guys I'm definitely on. I got DJ at 10-1 a few weeks ago. Last I saw, he was 6.5 or 7. So I kind of like having
5.5.
A little bit. 5.5.
Yeah.
Hey Kevin, what's your stance on Henley after his performance this last week?
I like him a lot. Is he in the field? Like, is his exemption for next year?
I think it's for next year.
I've been searching for him. I don't know if maybe they just didn't include him for this because it was late for DraftKings, but for betting wise, the guy's got all the confidence in the world. One of my good friends used to teach him some and taught him when he won his first tour event. The guy is unbelievably good, and he's going to win a lot more times on tour, and his confidence is going to be as high as anyone coming into this week. So I would not be afraid to play him to win top 5, top 10, whatever you want.
I'm pretty sure I saw it tweeted out. I'm pretty sure I saw it tweeted out where he's like top option for alternate this year because of the win. I think his exemption's for next year.
Okay. No, he's in. He's in. They won't add him in DraftKings till tomorrow. They're adding in like 3 or 4 more people besides him tomorrow.
But yeah, they got
odds up right now on Bovada 100-1.
Yeah, it's a pretty darn good number.
Well, now that we're talking about Henley, what DraftKings price would you need to play him?
Well, looking at all those names, you figure he's probably going to be priced, 7,800 or so, I'd say.
I would put him more in the 73.
Yeah, 72, 73 is kind of where I was leaning.
I wouldn't be afraid of – I wouldn't hesitate one bit to play Russell Henley this week.
Perfect. Jesse, what kind of picks are you making for the Masters?
So the reason we talked about Keimer is that's 100% my fault because he had a really good round, I think, a couple weeks ago. And I called up Sheridan and I was like, dude, right now, do it. Hammer him. And we did. And this was before, like, even he just looked so good to me. Anyways, so we're already on Keimer, but you know, I would look at, you know, for long shots, for punts. You know, I'm not a big single bet guy, but like some odds I could get behind would be Sullivan at 175-1, you know, Webb Simpson 200-1. I don't think that's a bad price at all for him. And, you know, you could even sprinkle a little bit maybe potentially on a guy like Swofford at 200-1. And if you can get some top 10 odds on something like him, you never know when he could get hot. He could also miss the cut. But I think, you know, you just don't know. So I don't know. I'm not betting. I probably won't single bet this whole entire thing. But those would be the guys, if I'm looking at some punts, I would take a chance on.
Sweet. Well, that pretty much covers everything. I wanted to mention to people that on DraftKings, there's the Millie Maker. It's $33 entry, 150 max. Or the new thing they've been doing in basketball, some baseball, and golf, the $3 birdie is up to $600,000 for the Masters, and it's only a 20 max entry. So for the just average players or whatever, they just want to have some fun, you can still – you don't have to get overwhelmed with the pros that have 1,000 entries, it feels like, in there. So something to think about. I know the prize isn't as high on top, but still, if I won the $600,000 $3 birdie, I would be just fine with life. So –
yeah, 50K would be okay to take. Yeah, $3.
Yeah, the million's cool and all. I get it, but just throwing it out there. Any last words, guys?
Well, so I would check those out as at the same time, and I have a feeling that they're not going to fill, but we'll see.
They haven't been filling lately. Anything else, gentlemen, before we call it a day?
No, thanks for doing this.
No, thank you for coming on, guys. I appreciate it. I love talking golf. Like I said, everybody thinks I'm just like a baseball junkie, which I am. Don't get me wrong. But I love golf. It is a big passion of mine, and I'm getting more educated by talking to you guys on the side, and it's a lot of fun. But I'm glad you guys could join me, Sheridan. It was a pleasure getting to meet you.
Thank you, guys.
We'll definitely – maybe let's shoot for doing this every major, if that works for you guys. We'll do a little fun roundup on this. It'd be fun.
Amen.
But again, you can find Kevin on Twitter at Kevin's Delight, Jesse at DFS Golf Gods, and Sheridan is at SSims715. Guys, it was awesome. I appreciate it. And we'll definitely do this again. And enjoy your voyage on Tuesday. I'll be working and very jealous of what's taking place. I can't even tweet you because you can't have phones.
Right. <Yeah. laughs>
Hey, the notepad will be out, and we'll be sure to tweet out a few updates on some things we've seen as we peruse the grounds with the fellow patrons.
That's what I was telling Jesse, because he said he wanted a live tweet. I said, well, I saw Kenny Kim from the Fantasy Golf Degenerates. He's going to have a notepad. He's going to come back and just go ape shit on his phone afterwards. But if you're having beers and eating sandwiches, just have some fun. I wouldn't even worry about whatever you want to do.
If we have any money left over after we go to the pro shop.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really, yeah. But again, guys, thanks a ton. We will do it again. And everybody, that was Benched with Bubba, episode 33, your Masters preview. We will catch you guys next time.
This is Sean Grain from the Sports Gambling Podcast. And in case you didn't know, the show you're listening to right now, as well as my show, the Sports Gambling Podcast, is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Blue Wire was founded in 2018 on the concept that independent podcasts would be more successful if they worked together. Today, Blue Wire has grown to feature 300 shows led by former athletes, media professionals, and passionate fans, plus guys like me who just love betting on sports. Over the past few years, Blue Wire has privately raised over $10 million to expand their team, podcast network, and business operations. Now they are raising another round on WeFunder. WeFunder is a crowdfunding source that connects startups with investors. It's a cool platform that gives everyone the opportunity to be part of a growing startup. You can invest for as little as $100. In other words, you don't have to be a millionaire to invest in cool companies on WeFunder. I can vouch for Sports Gambling Podcast and our Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Our partnership with Blue Wire has really been vital to us growing. Kevin and his team do tremendous work over there. So Blue Wire is raising money to expand their sales team and improve operations, which in turn will help this show and many like them continue to grow. If you'd like to be part of the Blue Wire investment round or want to find out more information, go to wefunder.com/bluewire.